Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality this evening. And if you would like to call in, you can give comments or ask questions, whatever you'd like to do. If you're in the U.S., 877-876-5227. Those of you in Canada, try 888-815-9756. Okay, so I thought this evening we would talk about esoteric and material crises. And I'll explain what that means for those of you who may not know at this point. But I also want to mention that although I started with the idea of esoteric, I'm going to pretty much come from the angle of introducing each subject on the more material side so it's more understandable, and then talk about the esoteric. Be aware that esoteric causes are more the reality, and the material issues that we get from those esoteric causes are results that we notice, but they may not be the real factors that are causing what's taking place. So what do I mean by esoteric and material crises? An esoteric crisis is a crisis in spirit and materiality being out of balance. It's a crisis in usually human beings functioning selfishly, and particularly in illusion, where they don't even know that they're being selfish, and while more often than not in the physical world, the one we're in right now. So that's the most common, we'll say, issue, most common way that we could say generally an esoteric crisis can be defined. And in terms of a material crisis, material crises are the ones that we usually are aware of, but we don't really understand how come they come about. We don't see the full nature of what the crisis is that we're in. And I'm going to start with one that I think is a pretty big one, but it may not be the biggest crisis that each of our listeners this evening thinks is the biggest crisis, but it is a big one. And that is that our present planetary, we'll say, balance of climate, and beyond climate, even the condition of our oceans and other factors, life in general, especially life lower in development than human life, is in jeopardy. Now, the jeopardy part of it is, now again, I'm talking more from the material side than the esoteric right now. The jeopardy side of the material side of the situation is that life is being reduced by a significant level. The types of life forms and the quantities of each type are being reduced. So we have species that are disappearing, and we have quantities of some types of life disappearing, reducing down. And this is very, very dangerous because the lowest life supports all higher forms of life. And when we start destroying both species and quantities of species, or subspecies or families, depends on, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of different ways of categorizing life forms. But when we do this, we reduce our own ability eventually to survive, and the entire planet's ability to survive. I'm talking about the planet as if it's like a living organism. That's one way to see it. And this has been going on for centuries, but it has accelerated in the past few decades. And the acceleration is mostly due to human illusion and greed, and our lack of understanding or consciousness about the interconnectivity of our behaviors in relationship to the results in the material world of the reduction of life in their world. Let me give you some examples. Right now, as I speak, we are pumping in huge amounts of greenhouse gases, the largest amount coming from CO2, but there's a substantial amount coming from methane, which is it's like natural gas is the way to look at it, but it's a gas that's produced in a combustion process with oxygen and hydrogen and carbon, and it produces as a result a greenhouse gas that's about 25 times more potent in terms of creating a greenhouse effect than carbon dioxide. Luckily, we don't make as much methane as we do carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, or we'd be in big, big trouble. Okay, but this is a dominant issue. But most people don't realize that not only are we creating a greenhouse effect, but we're acidifying the oceans. Now, when you acidify the oceans, you start killing the lower types of life first, and you also reduce some of the available oxygen in the oceans, both by warming them and acidifying them. And so this is producing an effect in which the basis of most of the food chain comes from our oceans. And so we're making it so it's very difficult for life itself to prosper and grow. It doesn't mean that everything's dying, but there's a significant reduction throughout the spectrum of life in this world right now as I speak, and it's starting in the oceans, but we don't particularly see it as much. I shouldn't say it's starting. It's happening more often in the oceans than in other parts of the planet. Although in some places, like rainforests, where we're just cutting them down, it's certainly happening there. And one of the problems is we're also losing diversity of life faster than we even losing quantities of life. And that's because, as on a material side, as we cut down the places where life is most, we'll say, most difficult for it to itself to find a specific niche, like in a rainforest, but in many other locations too, where we make it more difficult for life in those circumstances where it has to find a specific niche, then we cut down the diversity even more. So that's a material problem. Now, what is the esoteric problem? I want you to understand this. The esoteric problems, the esoteric realities, are much older. They go back thousands of years and potentially 10,000 or more years. So what does this mean? It means that 10,000 years ago, if we were all super beings hanging around and having a discussion about what's going to be happening on Earth 10,000 years from now, we would have had so much insight and understanding that around this time we would have been able to figure out pretty closely that sort of problem that I just mentioned was going to start happening sometime in the 20th century. Now, we're in the 21st century, of course, right now, but it would have started happening sometime in the 20th century, specifically maybe at the turn of the 20th century or so. It's where it really started to accelerate. And we would have known that. And how would we have known that? We would have known it because we would have realized that humanity would have reached a certain level of arrogance and egotism in their control of life below their own and disregard for that life, along with the ability to exercise power. Power has to do with the third part of God's mind. And the ability to take actions with power to start disturbing these systems. So we've got to be somewhat arrogant in our responses, meaning we don't really have much love for nor caring about, nor do we understand the truthful relationship between us and other life. That's our arrogance issue coming together with our ability now to take actions like build giant power stations and automobiles and airplanes and who knows what else, all these things, and develop an electronic eventually age that changes the speed at which we can do things as well. All this is coming together to create the effect that we were going to eventually be able to dominate by about 1975, give or take, or so, the lower kingdoms, especially the mineral and some of the plant kingdoms, and eventually the animal kingdoms as we move into the 21st century, to the point where we control the outcome of life, lower life, on Earth. And we could have known that 10,000 years ago if we were like some kind of super being, and knowing how human beings evolve. What is it that's so special? Well, you got to understand how ray energies affect senses and accelerate the development of certain parts of all of life, and especially human life, and that there's a plan. There's a general plan carried out by beings beyond ourselves, which goes all the way to God, and we are not puppets, but we are responding to these incoming energies and developing our senses and our abilities to whatever level we choose and in whatever way we choose. So don't think we're being controlled or forced to do something. We're giving up, given opportunities, and we choose to then take those opportunities and do what we want with them. That's the esoteric reality. And it's kind of frightening in some respects, because what it means is that we are the ones who determine what's going to happen to us. Kind of scary. And when you think about it, you got to say to yourself, well, where is this all going to end up? Where is this all going to lead to? Because somewhere down the line, we're going to pay a penalty for these actions that we seem to be taking at the present time. So I would like you to consider this. And it's a difficult thing to consider. That if we don't become more aware of the esoteric realities of why we're doing things, we're probably not going to be able to solve the material crises. And that's what this program is about. I'm trying to join these two together so that we can see some solutions to these problems that are more hidden from us. Esoteric means hidden. It doesn't mean, you know, a lot of people think it means, oh, isn't that like some kind of magic or something? No, it just means hidden. And esoteric, something is hidden. That's all. Hidden from us. Not hidden from everybody. Obviously, those great beings I talked about, they're beyond human. From 10,000 years ago, it wasn't hidden from them. It's not hidden today from them. But it's been hidden from us. And I'm trying to unhide it. So we'll try to get this thing to the point where we get some real understanding of what we can do about it. Okay, so let's take this first crisis. The first crisis is we're killing ourselves, and in the process we're killing the planet. What can we do about that? Well, the first thing is we can start looking at ways that we are using our resources to detoxify the environment, and we need to make some changes. At the same time, we don't want to reduce significantly our use of energy so that we destroy our ability to have an economy and to have some influence over the world. Because if we don't have influence over the world, the way things are going, they're already too far gone. We've got to do things that are proactive to make it better. And if we disable ourselves by saying, okay, let's all go back to the 19th century, or maybe let's go back to the 18th century and live like that. Won't that solve the problem? Well, maybe if we all did that, but if some of us do that, all it's going to do is weaken our ability to truly make a change. So what I'm suggesting is not such a radical approach that everybody starts living off of, you know, almost nothing. But instead, let's start exercising conservation measures so we reduce the amount of energy we need to live approximately the same way. And then the energy that we don't use, that's a savings, we then convert that into new technologies that allows us to be able to use the same or more amounts of energy that we have previously been using, but in ways it doesn't produce the same kind of problem. Let me give you an example of this. Right now we have a big problem with coal. You might say, oh, what's the problem with coal? We got lots of that stuff. Yeah, we do got lots of it. We got a couple hundred years or more of it. But the problem, and that's just in the U.S., the problem with coal is that it produces a heck of a lot of bad things, but most of the bad things we've gotten out of coal. Except we haven't found a way to really deal with carbon dioxide. You may have heard about sequestering. Let's pump the carbon dioxide down into the ground. It doubles the price of making the electricity, and it does some other problem issues. So the question is, can we afford it, and does coal make sense then? Maybe not. Okay, but here's some more alternative approaches to dealing with coal. I'm just going to suggest these. Right now we take coal and we change the coal into energy and a gas. My suggestion is to take the gas that comes out of the coal and change it back to something that is a solid substance using a thing called hydrogen, which is the gas itself, and you can get plenty of hydrogen from water, and join the hydrogen with the carbon dioxide. This is going to sound strange to you unless you're a chemist. Join it with carbon dioxide and then add a few other elements to it and make some plastics. That's a solid thing. And it would take a huge amount of the gas to make a relatively small amount of the solid plastic, but then we wouldn't be making plastics as much from oil, so it would leave us with oil for other purposes. And we would have a large amount of different kinds of plastics we could make out of carbon dioxide if we add these extra ingredients to it. Instead of pumping it into the ground, I think that may be useful in some certain locations, but most of the time I think it might be better to be a little bit more advanced in our chemistry and see if we can't try to make some kind of useful material with carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide mixed with hydrogen, which makes hydrocarbons, and then adding a couple other elements to the process, depending upon what kind of material you want to make, can make some really interesting plastics. You can make, if you add a little chlorine, you can make some PVCs and some other stuff. Now, I'm not saying PVC is the most wonderful thing in the world, but we use an awful lot of it. And if we can make PVC just from the outpouring of carbon dioxide and other waste issues, we might be in better shape than where we are right now. Now, for those of you who don't like PVCs, that's another discussion for another day. Right now, PVCs are just used all over the place, and they could be made possibly in a chemical process that I'm suggesting. We are already using and expending a lot of energy to make PVC, so why not use that energy in conjunction with the output of these plants and see if we can do double duty with the plants. Now, you might say, oh, that sounds like something, you know, like science fiction. Well, it's not really if you're an advanced chemist, which I'm not claiming I am. I'm just saying from what I know about it that you could possibly do this. It would take some experimentation and kind of almost, we'll say, pushing on the science a bit. But it's not science fiction, believe me. You can get some of the results I'm suggesting. And I'm only bringing this up as an example, not like as this is the solution. I'm just trying to show how, if you look at the situation a bit differently, you might come up with a better solution than the one that we're dealing with right now. I hope we will anyway. Okay, so there's one possibility. It's a kind of, it's just to give you an idea. Now, how does that work if we're talking about an esoteric cure? Well, the esoteric cure comes because we're not going to think of what I just suggested, and there's many, many other alternatives, unless we're seeing this as a whole picture. We have to take responsibility for the problem and see that we have to solve it in a much bigger way. We can't just, as our present political administration is trying to do, saying, well, we're just going to go to alternative energy and screw coal. Even though I know Obama said, hey, clean coal, clean coal, clean coal. The fact of the matter is he wanted to get elected. And he was trying to, he was selling that to West Virginia and stuff, where they have a lot of coal mines. But you see, the fact of the matter is then and even now, there's no real solution for clean coal that someone has come up with by the sequestering process or something else. I'm coming up with something that's a little more, we'll say, practical and inclusive. That it doesn't just try to get rid of the carbon dioxide, but let's use it for something that makes sense. You see? I hope that makes sense to you. Inclusiveness allows us, which is the same as saying consciousness, to see a bigger picture and a bigger use for things that we're trying to get rid of. Instead of trying to get rid of it, maybe we can use it. Maybe we can use it in a way that will be really helpful for us and the planet, and will resolve so many other things. Because when you make PVC, you actually make more polluting things in the process, whereas in this situation, we would be reducing the pollution process and still making PVC or some other plastic, as an example. Again, these are just examples. Okay, now let's move on, because I got a lot of things to talk about and not a lot of time. All right, so let's move on to another area where I see a crisis at hand. And now I'm really going to just completely shift gears. I'm going to talk about the crisis in the Middle East, particularly Afghanistan, and even more in Pakistan. Since Bhutto was killed, you know I had a couple programs about talking about that, and one specifically about her murder. I warned that Pakistan was ripe for very bad conditions, and unfortunately, those conditions have manifested. Her husband is not the politician she was. You know, I think she knew that. And he doesn't have a good grasp on his government as prime minister. And worse than that, the military in Pakistan is very disloyal to any specific government. It's estimated 25% of the military is actually composed of people that are sympathizers with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Well, guess what? They're not going to be too anxious to do a heck of a lot about those terrorist organizations and groups. And if you don't think the Taliban are terrorists, then I suggest that you read about what they have done and what they are doing presently in the areas that they control. It's terrorism on a mass scale. And it's dictatorial and it's destructive. It's the worst kind of religious, we'll say, intolerance and destruction to the rights of people, especially women, by the way. And so, okay, so we have this we'll say, cancer that is eating away at Pakistan. And the military is really running the country, more or less, you know, sort of, except they're more concerned about India. And I don't think India really cares about Pakistan anymore, other than they just don't want them bothering them. And they're not looking at what's really going on in their country, because some of them, like I said, are sympathizers, and the ones who aren't sympathizers aren't really wanting to go fight. But these terrorists, although they only make up maybe 100,000 people, it's not that many out of the total population of, what is it, 50 million. These people are going to take over that country because they are not being stopped. Now, you might say, yeah, the last couple of days we heard that they're fighting back, you know, the military's fighting back. You know, they put on a show because they want money. But do they really, once we give them more money, are they really going to continue with that? I don't know. I would say we have to be really astute about the situation. Because the greatest danger is that if Pakistan becomes politically and militarily controlled by the Taliban / Al-Qaeda, the results are going to be devastating. The nuclear weapons there, although the codes might be still held by the political leaders presently in power, those leaders will easily be tortured and give up the codes, believe me. And then those codes will be controlled by this dictatorship of evil. And you're going to say, don't give them any ideas. Well, I don't think I'm giving them these ideas. I think they already have them. One of their plans could be, and I'm not saying it is, to shoot nuclear bombs now, like megaton bombs, into Tel Aviv, possibly into our troops presently stationed in Iraq, and they're outside the cities now, which makes them actually more vulnerable to a nuclear attack, because it's easier to attack them and not wipe out the rest of Iraq. And also into Afghanistan. They could literally wipe out 90% of our military without even attacking us directly on the shores of our country. Also, they could possibly reach places like parts of Alaska, Seattle, with their rockets and nuclear bombs as well, not to mention the possibility of Hawaii or one of our other island, you know, bases. So this is all possible and maybe even likely, and they would still have plenty of weapons left So if we say, well, we're going to wipe them out, you know, for doing that, well, what if happens if they shoot everything at us? They can wipe out maybe a third of our country. So, I mean, you know, you got to really start thinking about what does this all mean? These are people that have already said they want to do what's in, right? I mean, they're not saying like, oh, gee, we really want to get along with our friends over in the United States. No, they want to destroy us. That's their verbiage. We should be destroyed, along with the people in Israel and a few other places too. I mean, they want to get rid of us. So this is a crisis because it's a crisis of evil. And it's a crisis of nuclear power that is getting out of hand. It's worse than the question of just proliferation. It's the total, we'll say, seizing of a nation's nuclear arsenal. And we don't, I believe, have a lot of options for dealing with this. We would probably have to go in ourselves if the military wasn't willing to control it. Their military was really, we would have to invade their country. I don't know how successful we would be in that endeavor and whether we could stop from happening what I just said. In other words, while we're going in to try to get the nuclear weapons, they just shoot them off. They don't have to shoot up very many, a couple dozen, and we'd be in big, big trouble. So, I mean, it's a very serious concern. It's a major crisis. What is the esoteric problem? The esoteric problem is our inability to squarely understand evil and to have faced evil in ways, instead of trying to confine it early and do something to destroy it, we have confined it late and done nothing or very little to destroy it. We had many opportunities to stop Al-Qaeda in the 90s, and we didn't take it. There's a lot of issues here that have to do with humanity's overall inability to understand and to do something that is about trying to destroy God. I know that you could say, well, but aren't those people real religious and claiming that they're doing it in the name of God? There is no such thing as mass destroying life in the name of God. God made life so it could grow. The idea that, gee, I'm a destroyer of life, so I'm making God grow more is bizarre. Of course, it's not true. It's a lie. And if we want to believe that lie, then we're going to be destroyed ourselves. Those who fail to understand what evil is and to do something about it will be destroyed by it. Remember that. And if you don't believe me, that's okay. I'm just giving you my opinion. If you disagree with me, give me a call. I'm right here. You can talk with me. And I won't necessarily argue. I just will state what I think, and you can always state what you think. That's what the show is about, and I want people to think. That's the main thing. Okay, so we have an esoteric reality of inability to understand evil behind the material crisis of why we're facing these terrible events in all these different countries coming from terrorism. And the terrorism specifically is about fanatical ways of quote-unquote being religious, which isn't religion at all, but it's just ways of exercising an evil doctrine. People who are evil wish to exercise power over those that they can for their own benefit in the name of whatever they can convince us of so that they can try to get away with it without us stopping them. It's a terrible, terrible thing. Okay, so there's another esoteric issue, and when we come back, we'll talk more about some other ones. The next thing I'm going to talk about is the question of a pandemic. Now, I just want to mention to you, for those of you who, I don't believe that this is the full bore pandemic that may hit us in the next 4 months to a year from now, whatever. But I do think that if you haven't gotten yourself ready or prepared for it, you should. Those of you who have listened to prior shows, yes, we have some of that product that you know about left. If you want to buy some, you can get onto our website and call us. I'm not trying to do commercials for it. We're going to run out of it. We'll run out of it before the next real pandemic. I don't think we're quite there yet. Yes, but so this wouldn't be a bad time to have it. If you're quite in an area where it suddenly comes out, this would be a good time to get some. So if you want to, give us a call because we'll be out soon. At any rate, when we come back, I'm going to tell you more about that and many other crises and why they're coming about in an esoteric way. And we should be back in about 3.5 minutes or so.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And today we're talking about esoteric and material crises and how there's a relationship between these two, we'll say, different ways of looking at something. Esoteric means hidden. And material, of course, is the results in the material world that are usually not hidden, but sometimes we have no clue why they're really going on. Okay, so in that last bit about Pakistan, etc., our problem is that we have to be able to recognize evil and do something about it, overcome our fear of evil, and be willing to do what's necessary to destroy evil without destroying ourselves, destroying life or anything else. Yes, sometimes evil is incorporated within life, and the life itself may die that evil is using, but that life is no longer part of God. It's been usurped by evil. So we free the life. I know it sounds hard to believe if we have to destroy it in the process of fighting evil. Difficult thing to understand for some people who are very, very pacifists and also don't believe in taking any kind of life. So I can understand their position, but it's still illusioned to some extent in my opinion. Okay. Now, I don't say it's great to go kill anything, because I'm not in favor of just killing things, but sometimes that may be the only way you can stop evil, if it's exercising its power through a life form that it is in control of, such as another human being. Okay, let me continue on now, and let's talk about this question of H1N1 pandemic. Well, about a year ago or so, a little over a year ago, about a year and a half ago, or a little less than that, but in that ballpark, H1N1 came over from Europe in a version that was, now this is an A-type flu. That's a more active flu in some ways, as far as the way the virus functions, than a B-type flu. And a number, usually more serious, more people die from A-type flus. And H1N1, the first time we knew about an H1N1 flu was way back in 1918. That was an H1N1 flu that became extremely virulent, had a high contagious rate, and a very, very high death rate, about a 5% death rate, which is not good. This is a tough flu because it has a lot of different versions. There's probably been hundreds of different, maybe thousands of different versions of H1N1 flu over time. But the critical element here is about a year, a little over a year ago, a year and a quarter, we had an H1N1 that came from Europe. And that particular flu may have been just as bad as the one that's presently from Mexico. Maybe not as bad, but it was a pretty bad flu, but not everybody got it, and it ran its course. I think we weren't noticing that flu enough because it had some propensities. The first was it wasn't very responsive to Tamiflu or to amantadine or romantadine. Those are antiviral agents. It was responsive to Relenza, which was good. And we found, using something we call Viropel, that this product worked extremely well against it because it was designed to work against A-type flu. And it helped if you took any of those other products with the Viropel, it actually worked better. So it actually allowed some drugs that normally the virus wasn't we'll say, resistant to become less resistant to it, to those drugs. That's a good thing. That was about a year and a quarter ago. Now, all of a sudden, we've got another version of H1N1, which has mingled with pigs in some of the viruses in pigs, so we call it a swine flu, but it's still an H1N1 flu, and it has also mingled with some humans that originally picked it up, the swine flu, because they were working with pigs. And it became a new version that can transmit from human to human. This happened about 2 months or so ago, maybe 3 months. And when it happened, a new type of H1N1 was created that has a missing protein inside of it that causes it to do some weird things. It has a longer incubation period than normal, which is not good because then people might be contagious longer. We don't know that for sure. It also has the ability, apparently, to live more in warmer weather. That's not good because the thing that protects it somewhat from the flu taking us over is that it has to kind of die out during the summertime because it just doesn't do well. Its ability, its contagious rate goes way down when it gets warmer. The cilia in our lungs and other things, it helps to get rid of material that the flu likes to float around on, bacteria and things. They get pushed out more, and the flu doesn't have as much of an ability to make us sick. Also, it just grows better in a colder environment when it's been brought in with cooler air rather than hot air. But, you know, this flu might be better at doing that than some others. But the good news is it's going to get warmer and warmer. And no matter how good this flu is, because it has a protein deficiency in one of its atoms or two of its atoms, it's not going to be able to probably survive through the summer. So the good news is, if you don't get the flu in the next couple of weeks, you're probably not going to get it till the fall. That's the good news. The bad news is, when it returns in the fall, traditionally, the flus get stronger. And they genetically may alter. And if it corrects this protein deficiency problem it has, it could go all the way back to an H1N1 of back to the 1918 version or something like that. If it were to do that, that would be devastating, just devastating. And so that's what I'm really worried about. You should start preparing now for that event. First of all, you don't want to get sick now, so prepare to try to not get sick. But even more so, prepare for a few months from now, because I'm more worried about that than I am right now. Right now, yes, some people might die now, some people might get sick right now, but I think that the future of this thing could be more towards the fall. And there's still plenty of time to have a major flu event. So in terms of a material crisis, those are the issues that I want to bring about. How will the material crisis then affect the planet? Well, there's some good news and there's some bad news. The bad news is a lot of people might get sick and they could die. And the good news is that if we have fewer people and a lower amount of resources available, some of the bad people, like the bad people in Pakistan as an example, or possibly some people in other countries that want to control us and do bad things, might get sick, and it may disable them from being able to carry out some of their darker plans in the next couple of years. So actually there's some advantages, but the disadvantages are there nonetheless, and I would hate to think that we have to kill millions and even billion or more people with a pandemic in order to resolve our problems. It's still possible that that will happen. What is the esoteric reality behind this, though? Why is this going on? Well, the flu is the flu virus are third ray creatures. They are dominated by third ray etheric physical energies that are around us, and also they even are affected somewhat by astral energies that are third ray. And so consequently, when we think about, well, what does that mean? That has to do with our throat chakra, and our lungs and the whole business. And so there's a tremendous effect coming from these flus in the area where the energy is peaking now, but it's also becoming used very, very selfishly by human beings. And so consequently, this allows us to become victimized by these energies that tend to want to take from us. It's like as long as we're taking from everyone else, then we're open to being taken from by diseases more, and particularly diseases that are focused in the center that we're using the most selfishly, which at this time is now the throat center, because the third ray is peaking and it's shifting. It's going to move out after the 2012 or so. And it will gradually, over the next 12 or 13 years, be replaced by the fourth ray, which is the sacral center. When that takes place, all kinds of things could, as crises, take place, and one of them is pandemics. That's why I've been talking about this for the last few years. And so the chances of pandemic are going up, and they will go up right through to until 2013 plus. So we need to be very concerned about this because there's an esoteric reality about the change in these energies. Now you can say, well, why did 10,000 years ago somebody decide that it's a great being to change the energies now? Well, because you got to do that in order for us to grow and develop faster. These energies are actually focused on the planet 4 out of 7 at a time at the present time. And so it actually causes the acceleration and development of life, but that doesn't mean that if we're selfish, we're going to necessarily develop ourselves, we're going to maybe destroy ourselves in the process. And that's what's taking place. I'm going through this kind of quickly. Some of you are familiar with what I'm saying, and some of you may not be. But if you listen to some of the earlier shows about the rays and things, it might make more sense. Okay, so how do we deal with this? What is our solution? Well, the best thing we can do in terms of staying well, et cetera, besides washing your hands, you're hearing a lot about washing hands, but I wish I was selling soap right now. But yeah, that might help. It might help in a purely physical sense. But speaking in ways that serves other people and helps them to further serve others is a very good way to not get sick with a third-ray virus. And if you don't communicate, even failure to speak is also just as selfish as speaking in ways that are untruthful. But whatever you do in your communication, when I say speak, I'm talking about all forms of communication. So if you prefer to just email people or whatever, it's the same thing. If you're using words and you're using your communication in a way that's self-focused, that will lead you to get more viruses. And more specifically, flu viruses. I know it sounds crazy. You go, oh, come on. How could that? That's the esoteric factor. That's what you don't know about. I'm telling you, I'm supposed to be here trying to tell you what you don't know, right? And now, it doesn't mean that you have to believe me. But I'm telling you that if you take my suggestion here, it'll help. Would it help to get a bottle or two of the stuff that I was talking about before the break? Yeah, that would help too, because what that does is it rebalances you, but it still isn't going to solve the problem. If you do that and you're walking around being incredibly selfish in your communications with everybody, that's not going to, you could take 20 bottles of that stuff and it's not going to change it, because it's just going to rebalance the energies. It's not going to stop you from continuing to destroy your centers that allows these viruses to take hold. So it makes, if you want to build esoteric immunity, you need to do so by creating virtue. And you need to do so for the purpose of wanting to do good, not just to stay well. Even though I'm telling you that it will help you to stay well, if your motive is only to stay well, guess what? It won't work. Yep, I'm sorry about that. It's got to be really from your soul and your heart, not just saying, oh, gee, I'll do it because the guy said to do it, because then I'll stay well. That probably isn't going to work for you at all if you do it for that motive, you see. But being aware that it does do that is not being selfish, and it isn't sharing in wrong motive. It just means you understand. It doesn't mean that you're following it for that purpose. Because if you fully understand, you never would follow it for the wrong motive, only for the right one. Yeah, seriously. Okay, so that's, there's an area where we can do something about it. Being prepared means more than just being physically prepared. It means changing who and what you are and what you're doing in your life right now. And if you can start right from this minute, and you can start building up spiritual immunity right away. And you can think I'm crazy. I know. You can think I'm crazy, but what do you got to lose? Try it, huh? And it's one of those things that's very hard to prove, because, of course, if you don't get sick, you can just say, well, I didn't get sick, but I can't prove I didn't get sick because I did this or that. But I guess that's the real problem. I guess you can go the opposite way. If you want to see if it's proved me wrong, so to speak, you can try to be more selfish and see if you don't get sick. That's, I guess, an interesting scientific experiment there. All right, so at any rate, esoteric realities are very difficult for us to be able to put our fingers and say, this is the real reason, this is the real cause that this or that is taking place. What else are we dealing with in terms of crisis? Well, economics. Boy, I'd save it for last. Why not, huh? Economics, a lot of people are hurting. I know some people are out of work that are listening to me even right now, or facing with maybe working at a job that's not fully employed for their abilities. And so what about that? How is that crisis related to an esoteric factor? Well, economics is compressed time and energy. And that's what it is. It's the ability to take our time and energy and say, well, how much money do I have? And how have I used my time and energy? The reason we are having the problems we're having right now in our economy is that we have taken time and energy and used it for wrong purposes. Some of those purposes are to scam other people and sell crazy things on Wall Street and these weird security things. Like, I'll ensure the fact that if you're selfish, you won't get hurt because you could buy my anti-selfish securities because I'm a big insurance company, and I'll protect you from your selfishness. And then, of course, the insurance company goes out of business because they sold too much. They were selfish in selling this anti-selfish securities. And so eventually it spread through everything, and that's one thing that happened. And then politically, our political leaders, we had some people who are saying, let's get votes from the poor and the disadvantaged. We'll give them a house. Let them buy a house, but they don't have any money and they can't afford it, but they'll vote for us. It's a great idea. You see, when you give people things that they haven't actually used their time and energy to create the wealth with, that's, you create an economic crisis. Yeah, that's it. There it is. And then other people did other goofy things. I mean, we had people that were deciding that they were only going to make money off of other people's inability to respond as fast as they could respond. We call them hedge funds. And they're unregulated, and so they found ways to rip everybody off. And then, of course, we have people doing Ponzi games, which is lots of fun. And then probably the biggest thing that we did that really is the bottom line of the whole thing is that everybody thought they could get something for nothing or very little. They wanted more for less. And they wanted it in ways that was purely material that only made their life less and less meaningful as they did so. So the real punchline of this is that people became divested of a good deal of the meaning in their lives, where they gained a lot of material things, from Hummers to you name it. And the interesting part about this is that we suffered even before the crisis actually happened, because we created an internal crisis. And where is the esoteric reality of this? The esoteric reality is that life has to be balanced between material and spiritual, and the only way to do that is by focusing away from our personal interests and towards the interests of all. As long as we are, it's all about what is important to us. As long as that's the bottom line to our life, we will suffer these economic crises on a regular basis, and they're going to get worse. Also, the government has come in, and now it's like saying, well, let's try to cheat the whole system. We'll just take everything over and create a kind of a socialistic environment, and we'll tell everybody how to live and what to do, et cetera, as if they weren't already a big part of the problem in the first place. Now, should there have been regulation? That I would agree with. But the regulation has to be regulation that encourages freedom and encourages capitalism that is also virtuous. One of the problems with capitalism is that it has to be regulated, or it becomes very evil, or very dark, I should say, and very non-virtuous. But if you go towards socialism, unless you're a very small country, socialism generally doesn't work, because the government can't figure out what's right, and it doesn't allow other people to be creative. So it controls the creation. And when the government controls creation, it is on the dark side. So we have a lot of issues. And here, you know, when you start adding these up, the economy is like, it's almost like a giant mirror. And all of these things that are wrong with our economy are really reflections of our inner selves and the things that we are doing wrong in ourselves that is being reflected out in terms of what we call our economy. I could give a whole show about this, because it's too big of a subject to get into. We're going to run out of time here, so we are running out of time. So just let me just say that if you are interested in more of what we're doing, please go to Thoughts at Why Life Is. And also, if you're interested in that product I was telling about called ViraPel, go to agelesswisdom.com. We have some of it left, but it's going fast. And believe me, when things get really bad, we'll be out. I am sure of that fact. Okay. So at any rate, I hope this has been interesting. We are out of time for right now. Stay tuned, because we have someone who's sponsoring our show, and he's got a commercial going. Yeah, listen to that before we get off the air. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.